This is on February 21st, 2008 in Auckland, New Zealand.
In the evening, rather than staying in the darshan, I went to off to preach to a middle-aged Frenchman who was staying in the guest house. I had actually a fill-in for me. Prabhupada called me into his garden later to inquire where I had been. As he relaxed on the seat under the thatch shelter, chanting his japa, I told him about the guest and complained that no one in the temple seemed to be interested in preaching to the people who come to stay in the guest house. Prabhupada's response was not what I had expected. He said that if our guests are interested at all, then they will approach us, not that we have to go to them all the time. The process is tadvidhi pranipratena, that one should approach the pradarshana. So guru eva vigachet, one must approach the guru. I was still doubtful. But Srila Prabhupada, I asked, isn't there a song that describes how Lord Nityananda overflooded the land with the nectar of love of God and dug a channel to each and every house from the main stream? So we are doing that, he replied. We are traveling all over the world, preaching and distributing books, and we have so many centers. But if someone comes to the center, then we have our program, classes in the morning and evening, and if he's interested, then he can inquire. There is a Bengali saying that if one is thirsty, he must go to the river, not that the river can be brought to all the thirsty persons. It doesn't mean don't say hello to people. Peter Burwash, do you all know who Peter Burwash is? He was saying how in 1 year he traveled to 44. Does anybody not know who Peter Burwash is? Oh, okay. So he's been a devotee. Never got initiated because he asked Prabhupada to initiate him at 8 mounds, and Prabhupada said no. But he said he's followed the regulative principles his whole life. And he met with Prabhupada many, many, many times. He was a top tennis champion in Canada. I think he was one of the top. And he was, I think, number 64 in the world. He has a center in Hawaii and a number of other places where he teaches tennis. He's very famous. And he also lectures in businesses on leadership. And Prabhupada specifically told him to teach about vegetarianism. So when he goes to businesses and places, he has really nice seminars about vegetarianism. He was telling us that if you're preaching to women, you preach about ethics and mercy, to men, health, and to teenagers, ecology, if you want to talk about vegetarianism. He has a lot of nice presentations. Anyway, he gives a number of seminars also to devotees, and he also, I think, to the GBC. Very wonderful man. And he said that in 1 year he visited 44 different temples, and in only 2 places did anybody come up to him and say hello.
Where were they?
I don't remember. But yeah, at least if someone comes, we should say hello. Hello, welcome. Okay, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14, text 38, and thank you very much. We weren't sure if there was going to be a class yesterday, so whoever gave class yesterday? Who gave class yesterday on 37? Thank you. I'm very happy I didn't have to speak on that verse. Very awesome. I looked at that and I went, oh no. No, I don't want to talk on that. And then Madhuri said, no, we did a little class on 37, so you can do 38. 37 was about how enemies sometimes marry each other. Like Chitraketu said, my son who died early must have been my enemy in a previous life. I actually know some devotees who have had a very tumultuous marriage, and they recently did some past life regressions and found out that they died on the battlefield trying to kill each other. So that kind of stuff does happen. All right. This isn't any more pleasant of a verse, but at least it isn't on such an intense topic. Okay, text 38, this is a long, long verse, so I'll try my best. Etasmin samsaradvani nana klesho pasarga vadita apana vipano yatra yas tamuha vavetras tatra visraja jatam jatam upadaya socham muyam Bibad Vivadan Krandam Samhrishyan Gayan. Y'all know what Gayan means? To sing. Nayamanaha Sadhu Varjito. That's going to be very important. Nayavartite Dyapiyata Aradha Esha Naraloka. Where's Naraloka? Right here it is. Sartoyam Advanaha Param upadishyanti. Etasmin. On this. Samsara. Miserable conditions. Advani. Path. Nana. Various. Klesha. By miseries. Upasarga. By the troubles of material existence. Vaditha. Disturbed. Apana. Sometimes having gained. Vipana, sometimes having lost. Yatra, in which? Yaha, who? Tam, him. Uha vava, or. It's a long way to say or. Usually or is just va. Itara, someone else. Tatra, thereupon. Visraja, giving up. Jatam jatam. Newly born. Upadaya. Accepting. Sochan. Lamenting. Muyan. Being illusion. Bibhyat. Fearing. Vividan. Sometimes exclaiming loudly. Randan. Sometimes crying. Samridyan. Sometimes being pleased. Dayan. Singing. Nayamana. Being bound. Sadhu Varjita. Being away from saintly persons. Na. Not. Eva. Certainly. Avartite. Achieves. Adya api. Even until now. Yataha. From whom? Aradha. Commenced. Eshaha. This. Nalaloka. Of the material world. Sa artaha, the self-interested living entities. Yam, whom? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Advanaha, of the path of material existence. Param, the other end. Upadishyanti, saintly persons indicate. What does that mean literally, upadishyanti? Upadishyanti. Or see instruct. Upa, higher. So he's saying saintly persons because that's referring back to the Sadhu Varjita. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's a long translation. Translation is about the same length as the purport. The path of this material world is full of material miseries and various troubles disturb the conditioned souls. Sometimes he loses, and sometimes he gains. In either case, the path is full of danger. Sometimes the conditioned soul is separated from his father by death or other circumstances. Leaving him aside, he gradually becomes attached to others, such as his children. In this way, the conditioned soul is sometimes illusioned and afraid. Sometimes he cries loudly out of fear. Sometimes he is happy maintaining his family. And sometimes he's overjoyed and sings melodiously. Sounds like a Bollywood movie, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, all these hundreds of people. You ever seen a Bollywood movie? No? Oh, my goodness. You ever seen an old musical? Old Western musical where people jump up on the tables and stuff and just start singing? Yeah. The modern Indian movies are like that. They're like what my mother used to watch.
The dancing's
a little, the dancing's a little different. The costumes are a little different, but similar. You know? They're just doing their business and all of a sudden, and all these people in identical costumes jump out of the, you know, bushes or whatever and start dancing, isn't it? You've seen a lot of those, I can tell, yeah. So sometimes he cries loudly out of fear. Sometimes he's happy maintaining his family. And sometimes he's overjoyed and sings melodiously. I've never quite seen that happen in real life, though. Never walked down the street and had hundreds of people in identical costumes jump out and start singing with me. In this way, he becomes entangled and forgets his separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead since time immemorial. Thus he traverses the dangerous path of material existence, and on this path he's not at all happy. Those who are self-realized simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to get out of this dangerous material existence. Without accepting the devotional path, one cannot get out of the clutches of material existence. The conclusion is that no one can be happy in material life. One must take to Krishna consciousness. Purport. By thoroughly analyzing the materialistic way of life, any sane man can understand that there is not the least happiness in this world. Wait a minute, we just heard people were singing sometimes. However, due to continuing on the path of danger from time immemorial and not associating with saintly persons, remember that? Sadhu-varjita. The conditioned soul under illusion wants to enjoy this material. Material energy sometimes gives him a chance at so-called happiness, but the conditioned soul is perpetually being punished by material nature. It is therefore said, Janja Jane Raja Yena Na Ite Chubaya, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhulila 21:18. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was telling Sanatana Goswami, that material life is like a dunking stool where you go underwater, then you come up for a minute. Materialistic life means continuous unhappiness. But sometimes we accept happiness as it appears between the gaps. Sometimes a condemned person is submerged in water and hauled out. Actually, all this is meant for punishment. So even the hauling out is meant for punishment, in other words. Getting a little relief is part of the punishment. Makes it so much harder to take it when you're back down under again. Actually, all this is meant for punishment, but he feels a little comfort when he's taken out of the water. This is a situation with the conditioned soul. All the shastras therefore advise us that one associate with devotees and saintly people. Sadhu-sangha, sarva-shastrikaya, lava-matra, sadhu-sangha, sarva-siddhihaya. It's from Madhulila 22:54. What does that mean? Sadhu-sangha means associate with saintly persons, sarva-shastrikaya. All the Vedas, all the Shastras say, Lava Matra, 11th of a second, Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi Haya. So 11th of a second of Sadhu Sangha, Sarva means all, Siddhi, perfection. Haya, you don't get. You get all perfection from an 11th of a second association with a Sadhu. Even by a little association with devotees, the conditioned soul can get out of this miserable material condition. This Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to give everyone a chance to associate with saintly people. That means we just bring everybody and give them to Prabhupada, right? Is that what Prabhupada's going to say next?
No.
What do you think he's going to say next?
We have to be purified examples.
Oh. I thought I'd just bring everybody and just say, here's a saintly person. Therefore, all the members, just the GBC, Prabhupada said, He said, did he say just gurus? Just men? Just temple devotees. Therefore, all the members of this Krishna Consciousness Society, are we all members of this Krishna Consciousness Society? Anybody want to get out now before we read the next section? Therefore, all the members of this Krishna Consciousness Society must themselves be perfect sadhus in order to give a chance to fallen conditioned souls. This is the best humanitarian work. Sometimes a person is really struggling with some problem. You know, you're struggling to figure out how to work something. You're in a new kitchen and you can't get the blender to work right. You know, it just won't turn on. I had a printer once I couldn't turn off. I was given a new printer. I couldn't figure out how to turn it off. Or you get a new program on the computer and you can't figure out how to work it. You know, I got a message once from a devotee. How do I turn off the little paragraph marks on my document? Right? Or you're in a new car and you can't. I told you that story about the guy in the new car who went off the cliff. Did I tell you that? Oh my. Yeah, it just happened a couple weeks ago. My son was coming home from work and there was this car following him. Actually, no, he was behind the car. He was following a car. Couldn't pass it. And the car was going really slowly, like someone looking for where they're going. And then it pulled into the car park where he lives. And as soon as, you know, pulled in and was going to reverse to park, and instead of reversing, all of a sudden the car sped up at top rate, accelerated, and went right off the cliff. This is in California, where there's a lot of mountains, went right off the cliff. Yeah, my son had to call the police, and they didn't believe him because they said no car's going to do that, and it took them a while to find, it took them like half an hour to find the hole in the fence and find the car. Turned out the guy was fine. It had tumbled down like 30, 40 meters and rolled over, and somehow, because he had a seatbelt, he was just fine, just walked out of the car. But it was a brand new car. He had just bought the car, just driven out of the showroom, and he didn't know how to work it very well. So when he went to put it into, he thought he was putting it into reverse, and he put it into first, and you know how when you're in reverse, you have to give it more petrol? So he gunned it. So sometimes we... It was pretty hairy for my poor son who's watching this whole thing, you know. Nobody could even get down there to rescue him. The fire department came. Nobody could get down. Anyway, sometimes we get something, we don't know how to work it, right? We're trying to work it. Oh, there was one devotee in London who rented a car. And he couldn't get the key out of the ignition when he parked it. He just couldn't get the key out of the ignition. Some of you know what the problem is? You have to put it in park. Yeah, he was used to driving a manual and he rented an automatic. Yeah, and he was there. He'd come for a meeting. And he came in the building, and he left the engine running. He came in the building, he said, I'm sorry, I'm late, but I can't figure out how to turn up the car. Can't get the key out of the ignition. So sometimes we have a problem, we don't even know what the problem is. Or sometimes I've read about people who have all these really strange diseases that go from doctor to doctor to doctor, nobody knows what's wrong with them. And sometimes it takes them 10 years to get a diagnosis. Just when you get a diagnosis, it's such a relief. You know? Right? Oh, now I have a name for my disease. I have a name for the problem. People are having problems in their personal life. And I was experiencing this with devotees. A devotee who had just taken over a school and wasn't so experienced running the school. And then we had a meeting with several other people who ran schools. And she said, I'm having this and this problem. And they said, everybody who runs schools has that problem. Oh, at least you get a diagnosis. What's the problem? And then you can get a proper cure. Right? So many times we have problems. We don't even know what the problem is. Why can't I get this stupid thing to work? What's what's wrong with my relationship, or what's wrong with this machine? Is it me? Is it somebody else? Is it just that I don't know what I'm doing? Is the machine broken? Is there something wrong with this other person? Is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with the situation? And someone comes and says, okay, this is the problem. Isn't it? You just find out what the problem is? I was speaking to one devotee in his 30s, about 30, who just discovered that he has ADD, where you can't focus properly. And just getting that diagnosis, he was like, oh, no wonder I've had so many difficulties. Such a relief. Just finding out the nature of the problem. Then what to speak of getting the cure? And how can you get a cure without the proper diagnosis? So my godbrother Sridhar Swami told me I should read Stephen Covey's book, and I still haven't done it, but I've read parts of it. Anyway, one section he says that it compares getting a proper diagnosis. He said just like if you can't see very well, and you go to an eye doctor, and the eye doctor just takes off his glasses and says, here, these work well for me. Try them on. Put them on. That's worse. He says, well, you're just not sincere. Because they work fine for me. So who would pay such a doctor? First, you have to get a proper diagnosis. Now, if you want the proper diagnosis, you have to go to somebody you trust. If you want a diagnosis and a cure, you have to go to someone you trust, right? So this same devotee who just found out he had ADD said a very nice thing to me. He said, someone you trust has to have two qualifications. One, they have to know what they're doing. They have to be an expert. If you want to know how to deal with the car, they've got to be an expert in the car. You want to know how to deal with the blender in the kitchen, they've got to be an expert in the kitchen, in kitchen appliances. You want to know how to deal with your marriage, it's got to be somebody who has some expertise in relationships, right? So they have to know what they're doing. And the second thing, they have to have your best interests in mind. Because if they really know their subject, but they don't have your best interest in mind, then they can intentionally give you information to make it harder for you, couldn't they? And we've heard of doctors who suggest surgery or treatment just so that they'll be able to, you know, keep up their membership at the golf club. So two things. Someone has to know, and they have to have your best interest in mind. So we have so many problems in this world. Anybody here have no problems? We have so many problems. And this chapter has been outlined. This is a very depressing couple chapters in the Bhagavatam, because it's just verse after verse after verse after verse. And by the way, you have this problem, and by the way, you have this problem, and you also have this problem, and then you sometimes have this problem, and you have that problem. But if we want to get cured, that's reassuring. You know, if you have some disease and you haven't been able to get well, and you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, do you have this symptom? 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 You go, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Oh, okay. So when we read this, we go, oh, yeah, I got these symptoms. Sometimes I'm happy and singing, and sometimes I'm crying out of fear, and yeah, and all this difficulty on the path of material life. Yeah, those are my symptoms. So who is it that knows? Who's the expert and who cares? Who knows what is our problem? Who's the expert in what our problems are and who cares? Who is that person? Krishna. What was given here in the verse? Anybody remember? The sadhus. The sadhus. So if you're having a problem with the blender in the kitchen, you know, it's time for the offering, 5 minutes to the offering, and you can't figure out how to turn on the blender. By the way, that printer didn't have an off switch. It was an always on printer. You know, it's 10 minutes to the offering, and you're trying, I gotta work this blender, I gotta make the nectar drink. Right? So medical doctor isn't going to help you. You have to find the right person. Someone who knows how to work the blender. Oh, I once went to a temple. And before I went, I asked the temple president, okay, do you have this and that? And I said, do you have any expert in technology? Do you have any techie there? Oh, yes, we have a techie here. But he wasn't really a techie. Took me 1 week to get online. So it has to be an actual expert, and it's got to be an expert in your area. Right? Like I have a stepbrother who's an ear doctor. He'll always say, not ear, nose, and throat, just ear. So if you have a foot problem, you don't go to the ear doctor. You have to go to an expert in your field. So the expert in the material miseries is the sadhu. The sadhu may not be expert in fixing blenders or ear problems or, you know, crying babies, but they're expert in how to get free of the material miseries. And the real sadhu also has genuine compassion. The real sadhu is not just a jnani, not just that they have philosophy. Both. They are an expert and they have compassion. And they're an expert not just theoretically, they're an expert because they actually have experience. It's not just that, you know, a sadhu is someone who's read some book. Oh, Lord, let me look up your symptoms and diagnose. So what do the sadhus tell us? Here we're hearing from a sadhu, we're hearing from Jed Bard and Sukadeva Goswami and Shiva Prabhupada. So what are they telling us? We've heard all the symptoms. I'm not going to go through that again, right? We all know what the symptoms are. Do we need to hear the symptoms again? A little bit they're telling us the symptoms again. We get a little bit of happiness, right? For a lot of distress. We'll just give a little summary. So think of any material enjoyment. Pick any one that you like. So in order to get that material enjoyment, first of all, you have to experience some suffering, or the enjoyment isn't pleasurable. If you're not hungry, is eating pleasurable? No. In fact, if you're really not hungry, eating is painful. You have to experience some pain first. You have to experience some need, some desire, some emptiness, some craving. You have to be tired. You ever try to sleep when you're not tired? It's not pleasurable. It's like, I remember when I was a little kid and I had chicken pox and wasn't very sick. My mother made me lie in bed. It was like a punishment. It's like, Mommy, I feel fine. Why do I have to stay in bed? So that's the first thing. For any material pleasure, one has to first experience distress, which means that the pleasure is just the temporary mitigation of distress. It's not a positive pleasure. It doesn't exist as pleasure in its own right. Like if you're hot and sweaty, a cold bath is really, really pleasurable. I don't know if it ever gets that hot here. If you're in a place where it's really hot, you know, taking a cold bath is very enjoyable, but cold baths are not enjoyable in and of themselves, are they? Unless you're feeling the misery, there's no positive happiness in a bath, unless you're dirty. There's no positive happiness in anything. It's just a temporary mitigation of distress. And then to get that pleasure, usually you have to work for it, to get food. How hard do you have to work to get food? Hard, right? To plant the seeds, you have to till the ground, you have to pull the weeds. Well, I don't do that. Well, then you got to make money. You got to do something to eat. Well, I just live in the temple and they feed me. Well, you still got to do something. You can't just sleep or they'll throw you out and they're going to feed you. Krishna says everyone has to maintain their physical body with work. So you're working, and that's just to get the food, and then you have to prepare the food. So I was hearing that some devotees would rather open up a can than cut veggies, even when they're grown on the farm. Yeah, it's a little paid announcement there. So you have to work hard. You have to cut the veggies. You have to wash the veggies. If they're grown on the farm, you may have to look for little aphids hiding in the broccoli, you know. And then you have to cook them, and you've got to stand over the hot stove. And then how long does the eating take?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, 20 minutes. You know, for sex lives, you got to get a job, and you got to get a house. And I've seen devotees have to build their own house, and you got to get an education, and you have to get a degree, and you have to have nice clothes, and whatever, you know. All these things. You do all these things. And how long does the pleasure part last? 10 minutes, 20 minutes, hour, right? So you're putting in 5 hours, 10 hours of austerity for, you know, 10 minutes, an hour of pleasure. And then afterwards, so after you finish eating, then you have to wash the pots. After your enjoyment in marriage, and you have to take care of the children, and you have to get them an education, and you have to worry about them, some of the things. Take anything in this world like that. So first you have to suffer, or there is no pleasure. So that means anytime we're attached to pleasure, we must suffer. We have to suffer, because the pleasure has no meaning without suffering. So as soon as you say, I want to enjoy food, you must suffer hunger. You have to. Not a very good deal. And then you have to suffer to get your food. Then you have to suffer afterwards. And if you eat too much of rich food, then you have so many diseases and so many things. Oh, but there's a little happiness. For 10 minutes, I get to eat good food. That's okay. So those are our symptoms. And then to get these things, we've discussed before, there's anger, there's envy, there's greed, there's lamentation, there's fear, right? Remember we talked about fear? Anybody remember what we talked about last time with fear? Want to tell me so I can... This is my test, folks, to see whether or not I'm a good teacher. You weren't here. Oh, okay, you're off the hook.
You're saying that many of our activities in Krishna consciousness are empowered by fear.
Yeah, everything, even in Krishna consciousness. And fear was compared to what? What was the analogy? An elephant, the elephant of death, and where are we hiding out of fear?
Cave.
In a cave, okay. So we're always full of fear, and because of that, because of our fear, we engage in cheating, lying, envy, and then, of course, we feel bad and guilty, and okay, those are all the symptoms. We could go on and on and on and on and on, listing our symptoms. Okay, diagnosis. What's the problem? What did Prabhupada say here in this verse is the problem? What's the disease? Those are all the symptoms of the disease. What's the name of our disease? He said it in this verse. It's a long verse. I don't think I want to read it again. What did he say? Yeah? Be very close. Yeah?
Not associating with sadhus?
Well, not associating with sadhus, that's something like saying you're sick because you haven't gone to the doctor. Because the sadhu in what we're talking about here is acting as the doctor. So yeah, I could say, well, the reason you're suffering is you haven't gone to the doctor. But the doctor diagnoses, the doctor looks at your symptom and diagnoses and gives you then a cure. So yes, it's because we haven't gone to these sadhus. And if we go to the sadhu, what would the sadhu diagnose? What does the sadhu here diagnose? Forgetfulness of what? Of what of Krishna? That's something a little different. Yes, what? Yes. Okay, this is your diagnosis. You have, you know, cancer, or you have a sore throat, or you have, you know, there's no on switch on your printer, or whatever. The diagnosis is, you're separated from Krishna. That's the name of your disease. The name of our disease is called separation from Krishna. I have the separation from Krishna disease. Okay? It says here. In this way, he becomes entangled and forgets his separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead since time immemorial. So now we got a name for our disease. All my suffering is due to that nasty person I have to deal with. All my suffering is due to the fact that my body's not very healthy. No. All my suffering is due to the fact that I don't have enough money. No. That's not the diagnosis. Just like sometimes you have a problem and you think, oh, this is what it is, right? And you try it and it doesn't work. You have to go to an expert, and the sadhu says, hey, that's not the problem. The problem is you're separated from Krishna. So we used to do a play of this. And they typecast me as Maya Devi. Anyway, we used to do this play when we did it for the Boston Rat Theatre. God, that was a long time ago. It's like 31 years ago. So there's a fish swimming in the ocean. And he's very happy. See the fish swimming in the ocean? Do you ever do any, what do they call it?
Snorkeling.
Anybody here ever snorkel? See the fish? We were doing that in Hawaii. My daughter-in-law's father took us all up. Very nice devotee, Gobind Rinpoche. Took us all snorkeling, and we saw these beautiful sea turtles and pretty fish. And devotees took me swimming at the Gulf in Qatar, and these beautiful white silver fish, a whole school of them went up out of the water and went back in, little tiny fish. So the fish are swimming in the ocean. And Robert says a big elephant is in danger in the ocean, but the little fish, even those huge waves, right, it's happy in the ocean, has the shelter of the ocean. And one day our fish decided to believe in Darwin and come out of the ocean and see how it can be happy on the land. Just like the people on the land are looking in the ocean and thinking, oh, that's fun. So the little fish looked at all the swimmers on the beach and said, I think I want to be happy, and came out of the ocean. But what happens to a fish when it's out of the water? Can't breathe. But Mahadevi comes to the little fish and says, oh, little fish, you have finally come to the place of enjoyment. Why did you stay in the ocean?
What do I do? What do I do?
Well, first, little fish, you get an education.
Okay, my.
So you sit in the school, and you learn all about all the treaties, and all the wars, and all the names and the dates, and you pass all your exams, right? And you learn how to do your times tables.
Now what do I do? I got my education.
Well, now, little fish, I have to get a good job. Get a good job, and you start as the stock boy. That's what my dad did. Started as the stock boy in his dad's business and gradually worked his way up and became the CEO, and he became the chairman of the board. Hey, get a good job.
I still can't breathe. Why? What do I do?
We have to get married. Of course, you have to marry other fish who are out of the water, so they can't breathe either.
But if I married you, I'd be happy. I thought that about you too. And we just can't breathe together.
And finally, at a certain point, the fish says, you know, I don't think this Mahadevi is really helping me very much. The problem is I'm separated from the water. That's my problem. I'm out of the water. I have to get back. So, what's the cure? Very interesting cure. Narada Muni says, does not a thing, when applied therapeutically, cure a disease which is caused by that very same thing? So sometimes, you know, if you drink too much milk, you'll get loose bowels, and you can cure that with yogurt or with curd. It's very effective. So how does one cure all of the miseries caused by being separated from Krishna? To feel separation from Krishna. How? That is our process. Our process is to feel separation from Krishna. Our miseries are that we have forgotten our separation from Krishna. We need to feel that separation in love. And that is how then we also become sadhus. So just like it's very, very common that a person will have some problem, find the solution to their problem, and then be so happy that they want to then help others with a similar problem. Isn't that very common? A person finds a way to become rich and then wants to give other people the secret. Of course, they often charge for it. Or a person, you know, they get cured from some disease and they want to tell everybody else, oh, this is how you can get cured from your disease. Many people go into helping professions because they themselves were helped. That's very common. So when Prabhupada's asking all of us to become the sadhus, all of us to become the sadhus, so one could say, oh, well, that means we must themselves be perfect sadhus. So that means we must be very strict in our externals. So that's a fact. If we want to claim that we're sadhus and we're going out to the cinema and we're eating all kinds of garbage and we're having illicit connections and we're taking drugs, then certainly we're not going to be in any position to instruct others, not only that, but we will give Krishna a bad name in human society. So certainly, Prabhupada is talking about the externals. But just doing the externals isn't enough. First of all, just doing the externals cannot be maintained by most people. Some people can. There are some people who can go for life after life after life just doing the externals. I mean, there are people like that. Just like there are people who can show up every day at a job and do the same work every day, even if it's boring work. So there are people who can, you know, go through the external in a ritualistic way in some religious system just to get some status and prestige or just to have, you know, a place to stay or something. That's possible. But Prabhupada wants us to do the external, certainly. But he wants us to become real sadhus. So real sadhus are people who feel separation from Krishna. You may say, well, wait a minute. If all my miseries are caused by feeling separation from Krishna, why do I want to do more of that? Sounds awful, doesn't it? Sounds like I'd like to meet Krishna and not feel separation. But we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna himself, when Krishna wants to experience the highest happiness, what does he do? He takes the mood of Radharani and he feels constant separation from himself. How can he not feel anything else? How's he going to meet himself when he's himself? He kind of tries it with Jagannath. There is Jagannath. But he's feeling always separation. Actually, Gopal Kumari is explaining to his disciple. He says how Krishna goes to Mathura, and his disciple says, why didn't you also go? He says, no, we don't want to leave Vrindavan. He said, anyway, this feeling of separation from Krishna dances on the heads of all other happiness. And that's after describing progressively higher and higher forms of happiness. So what is this feeling of separation from Krishna, which cures the separation from Krishna, which is the cause of all of our difficulty and makes us actually sadhus? How do we do that? Krishna is in our hearts. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Rudeshaya Junatistati. Ramanam Sarvabhutanam Yantra Rudan Maya. He's right there in our heart. We sing every day. Bahir Nisingo Rudaye Nisingo. Krishna is in our heart. Well, if Krishna is in our heart, I mean, we take that as a theoretical construct, maybe. Yeah, Krishna is in our heart. Krishna is actually in our heart. No, Krishna's there. Well, Krishna's there. Radharani must be there. All of his potencies must be there. His Dham must be there. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his little book, Rupa Chintamani, says, you meditate how in your heart there is all of Vrindavan, and in the middle there's a throne on which sits Radha and Krishna surrounded by their associates. So that means that they're here. And how wonderful Krishna is. Bhaktivam yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshram suridam sarvabhutam. He's always enjoying. God is not he's not some old man with a beard or someone sending people to hell. He's always enjoying. Well, we would like an eternal teenage party. Picnics and swimming. Cheating the grown-ups, being heroes and killing the bad guys, and always new games, and always new food, and always new intrigue. That's all he's doing. He doesn't have any job to do. He doesn't have to go to work. So Bhoktaram, he's the enjoyer. And Maheshram, he's got everything under control. Right? In this world, we try to take shelter of people that we think will have everything under control, but it doesn't work. Then. He's got everything under control. And Suridam, we were saying, who do we really trust? Someone who really knows what they're doing and who has our best interests in heart. Ultimately, that's Krishna. He knows what he's doing. He's got everything under control. And he's our very best friend. He's our very best friend. Even we've been nasty to him, and he still loves us unlimitedly. He has an unlimited capacity to give us love and an unlimited capacity to receive our love. And he's right there in our heart. He's right there. He's right there with us. And he's so beautiful. Everything about him is so attractive. He's beautiful. He's kind. He's adventurous. He can even be attractively arrogant. He's not wimpy. He has all these wonderful adventures, and he's right here. He's right, he's with us all the time. Shouldn't we want to be with him? Well, we hanker to be with so many things, with some other jiva that we care about in some place. We want to go to our home place, maybe. Why not feel separation from Krishna? That is the purpose. When we're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna is there in his name. Do we experience that? If not, we should feel separation. Why can't I feel you in your name? Why can't I experience you? Why can't I see the form of your name? That's also there. Krishna's name is there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, the name enters through my ears. Satam prasamado namaviriya samvido bhavanti ritkarna rasayanam kata. Ritkarna comes to the heart from the ear. So this holy name is entering these talks. Mamaviriya, the heroic talks of Krishna. They're entering into the heart from the ear. And then he says they come up from the heart to the mouth and are dancing on the tongue. So we should be hankering for it. And what happens when we intensely, fully hanker for that? How interesting is there is Krishna? Radharani says, I'd rather be separated from Krishna, because when I'm with Krishna, there's just one of him. But when I'm separated from him, I see him everywhere. So I was about a year ago, I was speaking to one devotee who was on pilgrimage and got very severely injured in an accident. And she said she had stepped on a poisonous creature. She said that she went into like convulsions from the poison, and she started just chanting, Krishna, Krishna. And then she said she saw Krishna everywhere. Krishna's pastime started unfolding. She said the deeper that she was feeling that separation, the more that she was seeing Krishna. So that is actual separation. So how do we do that? Well, one way is to consciously do that. That is the cure. We're supposed to be Krishna conscious, not Krishna unconscious. So we want to actively meditate. How Krishna's there. Krishna's there in his name. Krishna's there in my heart. Krishna's there in the deity that's actually Krishna. Krishna's there in the prasada. Like pretty soon we'll be taking prasada. That's Krishna. Here's Krishna. Where is he? Why can't I find him? Hey, Rad, hey, Rajadevi, Kay, Jamalite, hey, Nandasuri, Mata. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? And as we come there very intensely, then Krishna will appear. So one way we can do this is by meditating, just like here at this temple. They don't do this at every temple, but like here at this temple, every day you chant the Shikshastaka. Sunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virayam. So one can meditate on that verse by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I brought with me it. I've been learning this song, so I thought I'd share it. Is that all right? Is that okay? So this is a nice song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where one can get the sense of the intensity of separation that he's feeling from Krishna. Actually, these songs of the acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Rotimi Das Thakur, so many acharyas, I was just reading Prabhupada, said they act like a thunderbolt in the heart. He said, even if you don't understand the meaning, with the speaker, if you understand the meaning, Krishna always recommends sacrifices of knowledge. But even if you don't understand the meaning, they act as a thunderbolt in the heart that dissipates all illusion. So this is a very nice, I'm not going to sing it, we'll just sing. So he's saying, Mama Mana Mandire, in my mind, there is a temple. You know what Prabhupada said in Geneva, the chanting Hare Krishna means? He said, chanting Hare Krishna means that in your heart you make a very nice diamond throne and you invite Krishna to sit on the throne and you bathe him with Ganga and Jamuna water and you give him clothing and ornaments. So, mama mana mandire. So, I have in my mind a temple. Raha nisidin. Raha means to stay. And those of you who speak Bengali, I apologize that I'm saying this with an American accent. It must sound terrible. So, Raha Nishidin, you please stay in the night and the day. You stay all the time. Someone you really love, and you've made a beautiful, beautiful place for them, and you never want them to leave. Krishna Murari, Shri Krishna. So, my dear Krishna, you please stay in my mind temple day and night. And Krishna might say, well, why should I come? What's there in your mind temple? He says, bhakti priti malachandan. With bhakti and with priti, with love, malachandan. I have garlands and chandan, just like we're decorating. You see Govardhan there has been decorated with chandan. And sometimes, I don't think today, sometimes the deities are decorated, right? Different designs. So chandan doesn't just mean grinding the sandalwood, but any kind of decoration. Right? Nowadays people are into getting tattoos, so Krishna doesn't get tattoos, but he does like to have temporary. Although it says that on his left arm he has a permanent mark from when he put it in Keshi's mouth. That looks kind of very attractive. So bhakti priti malachandam. To me niyo, hey niyo. To me you, niyo, please take. To me niyo, hey niyo. Oh, you, please accept this. Oh, please accept this. Chittanandan, you who are enchanting my consciousness. And then Krishna may say, well, why should I accept anything from you? Who are you? Ah, jivane, jivana marana. In life and in death, in all circumstances. Not fair weather friend, not, oh Krishna, I worship you when everything's nice. Or not the no atheists in trenches. No atheists in trenches means, you know, I'm a materialist, and then when there's in danger, I call for God. So some people, they worship God when they're happy only, and some people, they only worship God when they're in distress. No, jivana marana, whether I'm living or dying. Tava puja niveda. Tava, your puja, worship, nivedan, prayers, supplications. I'm always worshiping you with prayers in all circumstances. Why? Because sundara hai mana hari. You are so beautiful. And mana hari. Hari means?
To steal.
You've stolen my mind, you beautiful boy. And therefore, in life and in death, tava, puja, nivedan. So, esho nanda kumar, come to my mind temple. Nanda Kumar. Arananda Kumar, come a little further. Esha Nanda Kumar, Arananda Kumar. And what will you get there? Habe. Like we have this, habe. When will I get? So now we're telling Krishna what he will get. Habe prema pradipa, with the light of my love. Arti Kumar. I will do arti to you with the light of love. Just like you're offering the lamp. You know, before people didn't have electric lights. And when someone comes to your house, just like now, you're going to have guests, you turn on the lights. If you're going to welcome a guest, you turn on the outside light. So you welcome someone, what do you do with lights? So what light is Bhaktivinoda Thakur going to welcome Krishna to his mind temple with? The light of love. Gazing from his lotus feet like we offer a light of to his beautiful smiling face. Oh. But Krishna's not coming. So I've invited him to the temple of my mind. With my love and devotion, I prepared chandan and garlands, and telling Krishna how he's captivated my mind and how in life and death I'm always worshipping him, but he's not coming. Nayana Jumuna, my eyes, Nayana, from my eyes are coming the Jumuna. I don't know if any of you have ever cried like that, just streaming tears. I one time I cried, just couldn't stop, not in devotional ecstasy, it was material. But just the river, and he says, Jare Anibar. Jare, it's just flowing like a river. Anibar, does not stopping. And my eyes are crying without stopping. Tomara, you virahe. So in the beginning, he says, Mama Mana Mandire Uraha. Raha, you stay. Stay. Raha Nishidan. You stay in day and night. Now he says, Virahe. You're not staying. Tomara virahe Giridhari. My dear Giridhari, you're not staying. I prepared the chandan, I prepared the garlands, I have the lamp of my love, but Tomara virahe, you're not staying, Giridhari. And I'm crying, so what will I do? Rabbi says this crying for Krishna is the price. Not theatrical crying, not that. Genuine. One must cry for Krishna. So what is Bhaktivinoda going to do? He's prepared his chandan, he's prepared his mala. He has his prema prati to offer arti. Jivana marana tava puja nivedan. In life and death he's worshiping Krishna. And he's there crying, Nayana yamuna jara anivara. But tomara virahe giridhari. So what is he going to do in his mind temple? Krishna's not coming. Vandana. What does Vandana mean?
Worship.
Worship, prayer. Vandana Gane. Gane is to sing. So here in this verse, people were singing like a Hollywood musical. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not singing like that. Vandana Gane. I'm singing prayers to you. Vandana Gane Tava. Your prayers. I'm not just singing any song. Vandana Gane Tava. I'm singing to you. When? Bhaju Jivana. For my whole life, Krishna Murari, Shri Krishna Murari. So I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to wait for you in my mind temple and just Vandana, Vandana Gani Tava Bhaju Jivana. For Bhaju Jivana, for my whole life. Or as Krishna's queen said, I'll do for many lives. Rukmini said, if you don't, come take me. Then I'll just do austerities, life after life after life after life after life after life. Just waiting. So that is the cure. That is the cure. To enter into this mood of separation. And by doing that, we actually become sadhus. And then we are able to take ourselves out of all of our suffering. And we are also able to deliver others. So I think I've exhausted my time. Some of you will start looking at your watches and sneaking a peek at the clock very carefully and politely. Maybe we can take one question. Anybody else? Yes? One eleventh of a second. Because a sadhu, a real sadhu, who's always feeling separation from Krishna, realizes the form and the qualities and the pastimes of the holy name. And although Krishna is in our heart, and therefore Vrindavan's in our heart, it may not be manifest there, depending on our degree of hankering for it. So if a sadhu has intense hankering for it, it's manifested there. Therefore, he's a walking tirtha, as it was said to Vidura. You're personally a tirtha. And therefore, even in moments, contact with that person, you're immediately in touch with the whole spiritual world. Just by the glance of that person, just by the good wishes of that person. Now, that doesn't mean that we should intentionally, okay, I've had my 11th of a second, I'm done. But it's enough. It's enough to start one spiritual life. So thank you. I'll be gone for a month. Krishna willing, I'll be leaving in a few days for Australia. And Krishna willing, I'll be back here last day in March. So please bless me that I can serve Srila Prabhupada and maybe one day become a real sadhvi instead of just some external Ramchandra Puri. And maybe you, all of you sadhus and sadhvis, can also bless me with a little lava mantra at least. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.